At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, everyone. I have a very special story to share with you today, a story I stumbled upon unexpectedly on social media, as one does these days. But when I saw it, I instantly felt compelled to follow the trail. It's a story of hope and tenacity and perseverance and determination during the toughest of times. In recent weeks, we've all seen the images of Hurricane Helene and Milton. For some of you, you've done more than seen it. You've lived it. And I've so appreciated hearing from you and learning about your experiences. For those of us on the outside, it's been heartbreaking to watch and to feel so far away. And there's this pervasive feeling that comes up in times like these of wanting to reach through the screen and help. Well, we have found a way to do that today through one family's story. Justin James and his wife, Amanda, started a shoe company called Opie Way. This shoe company does something few others do. They manufacture the coolest sneakers right here in the United States, in North Carolina, in fact. That's Justin and Amanda's home state. The company was the realization of a lifelong dream and years of hard work. And now, an unexpected turn of events that has left the future uncertain. Now that you have the basics, I want you to hear the rest from Justin. Justin James, the founder of Opie Way.
Justin, of all businesses that you could launch, of the many different products that you could produce, why shoes? What was it about shoes that you said, you know what, this might be where I need to go?
Well, I tell this story all the time, but if you were to ask me when I was in middle school what I was going to do as a kid, I would tell you I was going to design shoes for Nike. I was just way too infatuated with footwear from the time that I was a kid, really. So I followed that path, you know, all the way through school, went to college to design shoes, and got out of college and kind of realized, man, the mass manufacturing piece of footwear is something that really kind of took the breath out of me. You know, I had always loved the designs, and I could hold a shoe. You know, my mom would get me a pair of shoes for Christmas, like every year. That's when I got a pair of shoes, was at Christmas. And I can remember holding those shoes at night and like sleeping with them on my pillow, because there was just something about footwear. But then when I got to see kind of behind the curtain on how those shoes that I love were made, it really just, I don't know, it took this thing that I had dreamed of my entire life and really changed it in my mind. You know, I had a bunch of friends that had one specific friend that had a denim company that, you know, he makes it in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I had really these other brands that were making things in America, but no footwear brands in America. And I noticed very quickly that there were no sneakers being made here. And it just, I think with a lifetime of, you know, devoting all of my passion to footwear, it was very evident, like, okay, this is my chance and maybe my calling.
How difficult is it to make a pair of shoes?
It's pretty hands-on. So I'm the head designer for all of our shoes. So it kind of starts with a sketch, goes on to an iPad. You then have to create a last and create patterns and do all of these things digitally before you can even think about making the shoe. And then once you have all of that stuff and it's time to cut your leather and piece them into a shoe, you know, each one of our models for Opie Way goes through at least 100 steps, sometimes close to 200 steps. So it's a pretty hands-on process for sure.
Steps, no pun intended. But I saw what you did there, Justin. So having this idea of, you know, I really love shoes. I'd like to design shoes. I'd like to go into that sort of area of business is one thing. Actually opening a factory and getting your business up and running is something entirely different. So if you can walk us through, what was the path to going from this is something that I really think I may be called to do to actually getting it to be a functioning factory and business?
Yeah. So I will I will definitely acknowledge that it's crazy what we did. But I was just mentioning when I got out of college, I kind of saw behind the curtains of how shoes were manufactured. I had spent, 18, 21 years of my life thinking I'm going to design shoes, as my profession one day. And I came to this point where that was no longer going to happen. I kind of moved on to a different career path, but in the meantime, I just felt this connection to like, hey, listen, if I'm not going to design shoes, I'm going to learn how to make my own shoes. I'm going to make my own shoes that I can wear. My wife probably thought I was crazy, but I started sourcing these like vintage sewing machines and moving them into my garage and just trying to teach myself. You know, there were barely any YouTube videos, but I was trying to like take in anything I could to learn how to make shoes. And I did that for about 5 years, until I had, reached out to as many people as I could who might be in the footwear industry or the clothing or the textile world. And I had made a connection in Los Angeles. This guy had started what he was calling a micro factory for footwear, very much in line to what I wanted to do, but a little different. And he called me one day and said, hey, listen, I'm going back into the clothing world. I'm going to go start working for some other brands. And I have all these machines that I've kind of placed together in a micro factory here. And if I tell some of the bigger brands that I'm going to get out of this, they're going to come in and give me an offer for these machines that I can't refuse, but they're going to put them in storage so that nobody in America can do what I've built so far. And he's like, I think I should pass this on to you. I think you have this idea and you could take it further. And so I'd love to give you the opportunity to buy these machines. And at the time, I really appreciated him reaching out, but I didn't have the money, honestly, to do it. And so from that point, it just really sparked this interest. Like, this is a business idea that could actually happen. Nobody's doing it. And I feel like I might be the person that could do it. And so for about a year, I worked as hard as I could to just collect as much money so that I could have that money to buy those machines. And then at the end of 2018, we came up with that capital. My wife's grandpa pitched in and helped us on that initial purchase of those machines. We flew out to Los Angeles in December of 2018, and then to kind of look at those machines together. And then in January of 2019, we wrote the check and said, okay, we want these machines to be ours. We had no factory at the time. And so, it took us forever then to like find a space to put those machines. And we found it and they all moved to Fletcher, North Carolina in January of 2019.
And North Carolina is the home state for you and your wife. So was that the intention to bring this business back to your home state and invest in your community?
Yeah. I had some friends again that were doing things in the clothing world in North Carolina. We have always felt like this is our home. It's a very small town, but North Carolina is a very big, used to be a very big state for textiles and for manufacturing. And it just made sense to me to try to bring something back. The last U.S. Shoe manufacturer that left in the early 2000s was Converse in Lumberton, North Carolina. They moved out. And so I just wanted to bring it back to North Carolina. I thought it was fitting and it was always home to us.
Are you the only U.S. made sneaker factory in the country, to your knowledge?
There are some other smaller factories that are doing similar but different things. But I would say, on a scale of where we were going with our wholesale accounts, we were definitely like the biggest and up and coming in the moment.
So January 2019, you get all this stuff back to North Carolina and this is, you're in it to win it at this point. We're going to get these, we're going to make these shoes. How long did it take for you to get from January 2019 to actually producing a pair of shoes to sell?
Yeah, so we got all of those machines into the factory and it looked amazing. And then we realized we have no clue how to build this and how to scale it. And so it took us about 9 to 10 months to really understand the process of how to make those shoes, have our designs made, figure out how we could train people to work on an assembly line. And so, yeah, it was about 10 months of scratching our head, like, did we do the right thing here? And but we launched in November 2019, and it was, you know, foot on the gas pedal from then.
And foot on the gas pedal right into a global pandemic. So what was that's all I'm thinking. You're taking me back to 2019. I'm going back with you to January, to November. I'm getting excited about these shoes, and I'm thinking, and then it's 2020 and it's the pandemic. So
yeah, you know, that's,
there's a lot there. So it's just wherever you want to go with that, Justin, what was that like?
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. And definitely when you say it like that, it seems crazy. But in all honesty, it was probably the best time for us to start what we were doing. Because had we been in business for a year or two and then the pandemic happened, we would have everything to lose. And we didn't really have anything to lose other than we have to get this started. So, you know, I think for everybody else that had already been in business, it was the pandemic was a time of like, oh my gosh, how are we going to do this? You know, we've got like a norm that we've established for this business, and we didn't really have that. So we just had to like make do with what the time threw at us. So I always tell people, you know, in such a negative time for a lot of people, we kind of used it as a time to really like soft launch, and, you know, it kind of just worked for us.
Well, and what a great time to also be in to remind people about why supply chains really matter, mm-hmm. and why American made is important. And if you're smaller and more nimble, you're able to make those adjustments in ways that bigger companies can't. So if we go now, I'm going to take you far into 2024. So mm-hmm. now you've been operating, you know, 5 years before Hurricane Helene. What was business like for you? How many people were working for you? What did it look like at this point?
Yeah. You know, we had kind of grown our team off and on trying to figure out like the biggest thing for us was, are we going to be direct to consumer? So are all of our shoes going to be sold on our website only, or are we going to open up wholesale accounts? And, you know, over the 5 years, we would kind of beef our team up, and then, you know, some of our team would like go back to college, and it would kind of go up and down. But when the hurricane hit, we were at 4 employees plus Amanda and I. And it had actually, you know, been our best year on paper. We were growing some really awesome wholesale accounts. We still have some shoes actually that are in stock at a store called Huckberry, if anybody wants to go there. But it was really our best year. And we were really leaning into, okay, this is starting to make sense. We've got some followers who love us, and man, it had been really fun.
So really a realization of a dream, and with the recognition as well that a dream with a lot of hard work behind it. Take me to the day or two before Hurricane Helene. Had you heard about the storm? Were you worried about it? What was it like in North Carolina? Because on the news side, I covered a lot of different states preparing mm-hmm. from Hurricane Helene. And when it moved into North Carolina, it caught me sort of off guard. And so I'm curious if you could give us some perspective from the ground there. What was it like? What was preparations like? You're about 10, 15 minutes outside of Asheville, North Carolina, so folks can kind of get oriented with that. What did you think? What went through your mind?
Yeah, so that was like a, you know, the Thursday, like the storm came Thursday night, Friday morning. That Thursday, most businesses around here were kind of like letting their employees go home early, just because there might be some rain that would, you know, cause some problems getting home. It was never, to my knowledge, it was never thought of as something that was going to be nearly this big a deal. We had a sign on our factory door, you know, another tenant had put up that was like, hey, we're going to be closed on Friday. We'll be back Monday. You know, we'll see you Monday. So, you know, I had dinner with my father-in-law on Thursday night. We grabbed some wings, and just, it wasn't even a notion. You know, we live on a farm currently. And we were told, you know, maybe 25, 35 mile per hour winds, which wasn't going to be bad. So we just needed to make sure that the animals were safe. And that was really all that was on my mind. I had no notion that we had to be worried about our factory.
And then what happened?
So the storm came through here on our farm. It was pretty windy and pretty rainy, and there were trees down everywhere. So the storm was kind of crazy. We live on some land with my in-laws, actually are building a house on the land as well. And so me and my father-in-law were chainsawing trees for about a day and a half after it happened, just so we could get out of our driveway. We kind of thought, like, you know, this was the biggest deal. Some trees down, you know, we just have to clear a path. Power had went out. I didn't even think about the factory or asking about the factory until Sunday. Hadn't even crossed my mind. I hadn't even really hit the news that there had been any flooding or any mudslides until Sunday.
Are you near a river where your factory is? Is it in like a area with other buildings? Is it near a river? Is it near a hillside? What does it look like?
It's near a creek that turned into a huge river. The factory on our house, we're not near any water, just a lot of trees. But the factory itself is near, you know, a pretty substantial creek, I guess. We're actually in a building that's just under 1 million square feet. So there are, you know, something like 11 to 15 tenants inside of this massive manufacturing building. The building itself is on an 800-year floodplain. So, you know, doesn't flood there except once out of every 800 years. Nobody had flood insurance. I think the statistic in Buncombe County, which is where we're at, is like 98% of businesses had no flood insurance because we're in the mountains. And there's typically not, you know, crazy floodplains. So, it was near a creek, but, you know, I think the runoff from the mountains around us and that creek, there was about a 5 to 6 foot river that was running through the factory building itself.
So Sunday, you start thinking about this. When do you first see your factory and describe to us what you saw?
Yeah, I texted the building manager just to say, hey, you know, still don't have power where we're living. Just checking on you guys, your family, to make sure you're okay, and wanted to make sure that the factory was good. And he texted back like, hey, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but I don't think it's good at the factory. And he sent me one picture that he was able to get, which was the parking lot of the factory. And in the parking lot, you know, it was caked in mud and you could see rubber soles everywhere in the parking lot.
Those are your rubber soles. They're soles for your shoes.
Yeah, they were soles from our shoes. So I kind of panicked, like, this is kind of unbelievable to me. You could see, you know, there were vans in the parking lot that, you know, had a mud line, you know, up to their windows and had been moved in the parking lot by the water. Like I said, we had things were pretty bad here. There was no power, no water, cell towers were down. So you couldn't really talk to anybody on the phone. Nobody really knew what was happening. And then with power out, you couldn't really get gas. So my father-in-law and I got enough gas to kind of make it, up the mountain into the factory. And I drove around and got in the factory with a headlamp. And that's when we kind of, you know, found the condition of everything. So that was Monday.
What did it look like?
It looked like a muddy river that was almost as tall as me had just been, you know, forcefully come through the factory. I mean, it had taken, you know, it had carried machines. It had carried pallets with material on them, you know, 200, 300 yards in the factory. It was a nightmare. You know, I'm trying to like not get emotional while I'm talking to you, but it wasn't good for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can understand that. I'm feeling emotional hearing about it, you know, so I think all of us have been really impacted by the images that we've seen from afar, but to see them in person and come face to face with that, I can only think about how challenging that was. What if you could assess the damage, and I'm sure you're still almost in that process of what the loss is, what is the loss to your business?
So we pretty much lost everything. You know, Amanda and I had paid for, we had taken no investors. So everything had been out of our pocket, aside from the money that her grandpa helped us with those initial machines. So, you know, we probably lost at least $150,000 worth of machines, all of our materials, you know, probably close to that same number in materials. And then any inventory that we had on hand was gone. So, you know, anywhere fit between $50,000 to $60,000, just in inventory was gone. So, I don't know. I don't want to like do the actual math because it's not good, but you know, it's a couple hundred thousand dollars for sure.
Yeah, for sure. At this point, what is life like? Is it going to the factory to try to recover things? Is it looking through all the damage after that first kind of initial shock? What does one even do next?
You know, things were really crazy for about 2 weeks. You know, like I said, we didn't get power at our house for 2 weeks. Cell service is even still weird in this area because cell towers went down. I actually, while all this was happening and we were trying to keep things together at home, sorry.
It's okay.
I had to, make the trip to I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Sometimes it doesn't all hit you until you have a second just to talk to a stranger about it, Justin.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We appreciate it. And we don't feel like strangers right now. I mean, we can all only just imagine. And I know it's not just you and your wife that have built this business. You have three little girls, 9, 7, and 3. Mm-hmm. So while you're doing all of this as a young family, an entrepreneur with your in-law, everyone seems like you seem like you have an amazing family. I can't imagine what it's like to try to keep that on track. And then you have your children that you're trying to also care for. And that's also part of this. So
yeah.
There's a lot here. So don't.
Yeah.
Don't worry about a thing.
You know, so I think the biggest thing for me is knowing that we had lost everything in our business, but also what I was going to say was I had to go in on Tuesday. So the day after we found the factory in the state that it was in, I had to go and evacuate my mom from my childhood home. There was a mudslide in Fairview, which is my hometown, and it took out some houses, but it also took out the road to get in and out of her house. So I had to drive out there and backpack in and evacuate my mom so she could come stay with us for a little bit, even though we didn't have power or anything either, but it was at least safer at our house. So all this was going on, and it was just really so much at one time to figure out how are we going to keep things together, you know, with the family, but also figure out this business. So your question was like, how has it been? It's been a whirlwind up until now. I'm just this week kind of crawling out of and figuring out, you know, what do we do from here? But I will say, honestly, we have this amazing group of friends and customers and, you know, family who have been able to like rally around us and really root for us. You know, I'll be honest with you, on that Monday when I saw the factory, it was like, okay, well, that, you know, that chapter of my life is gone. We're gonna have to write this off and move on. That quickly changed over the next few days because we had so many people behind us like, no, you gotta build this back. You gotta figure out how to come back from this. And yeah, so that's I'm crying because I'm fighting off crying because I'm an emotional. But the amount of positivity that I've gotten out of this, you know, over the past week has just, it's been really incredible.
Yeah. How's your mom doing? Is she all right?
She's good. Yeah. She, people in Western North Carolina are really resilient. she was hesitant to leave her house. Her and my stepdad were hesitant to leave their house. It was my childhood house. You know, they had paid for it my entire life. And so they were scared to leave. My stepdad works for a gas company. And so he was kind of on 24/7, you know, emergency calls. So we just moved my mom in. And then last week we drove her back to kind of man the house and keep the generator running. They've got meat in the freezer, she said, and they just kind of wanted to watch over the house. So she's at her house now. They got power back yesterday. And she's just, you know, she's doing okay. But they have along with a lot of other people, they have a long road ahead of them.
Yeah. I'm thinking about, you're talking about the resilience of the people in Western North Carolina. Yeah. I'm a California girl. By birth, don't hold it against me, depending on how you feel about that, Justin. But I'm like, oh, this is what all the country songs are talking about in North Carolina. This is where I'm getting it. I'm understanding the lyrics and all of this. This is it. These are the people behind those songs. So I noticed on your website a couple of things. So I noticed the note from her about Hurricane Helene, mm-hmm. and there seemed to be some question about the future when that note was written. And I don't know when that note was written. But I'm also hearing from you in our conversation that you have felt a real calling since you were very little, that this is your vocation. So where do you feel now with the business? Is this, do you feel at this point, can you even think about that now? What does the future look like for Opie Way? And by the way, I know this is a big question, so let me ask you kind of a small question before that, just to warm you up. Opie Way, what's the name? What's the name behind Opie Way? What's the inspiration?
Yeah, you know, when Amanda and I were starting the business in that 8 to 10 months when we were in our factory, we also hadn't figured out like what our brand was going to be. We could not figure out a brand name. At the time, we had two daughters, Ophelia and Wayland. And we, you know, I think we just had this notion inside of us, like, if we're going to start this business, we also want to show them how to be resilient. And, you know, with hard work and dedication, you can do whatever you want. My gosh, this is going to be like an emotional wreck.
I have this effect on people. I have to tell you. I don't. It's okay. I really appreciate your honesty.
I'm gonna suck it up. But yeah, you know, we named it after them because we wanted to show them, you know, if you can get down to the hard work to do what you want to do, you can do it. And so that's where the name comes from, Ophelia.
So, what's your third daughter's name?
Her name is Pearl.
Pearl. Okay. So we don't want to, that sounds like a good line of shoes in the Pearl line. So,
we'll have a conversation about that Pearl name in the next 6 months.
In the next 6 months. Okay, good. So what does it look like from here? I know there's obviously probably mixed emotions every single day. I know there's a GoFundMe account that was set up to help support you and your family during this time. Is building back something that's on the horizon, or is it something that we're still assessing? How do you feel about that right now?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot going on, trying to figure out how much we lost, how much it would take to get things back up and running. My full intention is to do everything we can to make that happen. I'm not going to lie to you, the financial burden and what we lost and what we would have to restart is not a small amount. And I realize that's probably our biggest battle. You know, but like I said, you know, that Monday that I saw the factory, I thought that was it. By that Wednesday or Thursday, word had kind of gotten out to some of our closest friends. One of my closest friends who owns a business in Greensboro called Hudson's Hill started a GoFundMe, along with my other friend who owns a denim company in Raleigh. So both North Carolina guys started this GoFundMe to kind of tell our story, to help us kind of rebuild our lives. After that, there was a group then of about 30 American-made companies and brands that were willing to say, you know what, like, if we let them go down, then what even is American manufacturing? So we're not going to lose OP Way. And so all of those companies pulled together to create a raffle for us that filters through our GoFundMe. But if you become part of that raffle, then each one of those brands is going to offer something in the raffle to gift somebody, who has donated to our GoFundMe. So, it really just put so much inspiration, so much positivity, made me feel like there are people that believe in what we're doing. And so my full intention is to be committed to building something even better than what we were already, you know, kind of achieving. But we're going to need a little help to do that, honestly.
What will it take? If you could answer that as honestly as possible, what would it take to keep you open and running?
Yeah, you know, on the capital front, it's definitely going to take the capital. But I think there are some other things that we could do aside from that would help us, you know, good relationships with our material vendors. I've got some friends who also have some machines who have offered me the ability to, you know, either use their machines in the meantime or, hey, come pick them up and take them to your factory for as long as you need. So capital, definitely. This continued amazing partnership with other American manufacturers is going to be crucial for us. And I have no doubt that they're going to pull through for us on that one.
I noticed on your website, all your shoes are sold out. Is that because there's obviously very little inventory? So if people are looking to go buy shoes right now on the website, there's just no more supply. Is that correct? Is that how it looks?
Yeah. We had a pretty good stock of inventory that was all lost in our factory. We had, you know, my friend at Hudson's Hill, he had some of our inventory. It sold through in about 2 days. We are going to have another round through Hudson's Hill of some shoes through his store that he had already purchased to carry in his store. So we're going to list those. There's a retailer online called Huckberry. So it's huckberry.com. They still have two models of our shoes, and they have actually been so generous to say the proceeds from the rest of those sales are going to come to us. So if you purchase some shoes through Huckberry, you know, we will get some of that money to rebuild. But aside from that, you know, everything that's out there is out there, and it's not much at the moment.
Well, I learned about your story. I follow a company called Duckworth, and they too are American made product for outdoor gear. They have an amazing story, and they posted about your company. And that's how, mm-hmm. you know, you follow the little crumbs in social media. And sometimes you find an amazing story like yours. And just learning a little bit about your company, I thought I didn't even know that sneakers to have sneakers made in America, made in North Carolina was an option. And right away I thought, of course, like what do they cost? I'd love to outfit my whole family now that I know about the brand. Like, absolutely. This is what we need to do. We all need sneakers. Mm-hmm. We all need them. And I really appreciate you giving us some background about how you even arrived at this point, because I just can't imagine how much work that took and how much motivation and discipline and all the things to get here. So I'm really looking forward to owning a pair of your shoes one day. In fact, I might have to pitch you on, you know, we're smarter news. So I feel like a smarter sneaker in there could be, I don't know. We can talk about it later. We'll talk about it later, but I feel like I feel like there's something, I feel like it's on the horizon. I'm just going to plant a little seed. We'll revisit 18 right. months from now.
I know a guy, so we'll see what we can do.
I love that. You know, Just a final question for you, and we're going to make sure we'll put the GoFundMe links, and also we'll get all the appropriate ways that people can contribute, because I have a feeling mm-hmm. that a lot of folks will like to feel like we're investing in your future. And mm-hmm. it's a different sort of investment than the stock market or, you know, real estate. Is investing in a family and investing in a business and being part of a solution. So I'm going to make sure that all those links are there. I'm just curious, again, just based on how you've just talked about the last couple of weeks, you know, this feeling of having a calling and following your heart on this. I'm just wondering how this whole experience has impacted you, you know, in how you feel about your faith, how you feel mm-hmm. about your country, your community. again, I'm sure there's a lot to unpack there. But yeah. As you kind of think about that for a moment, what do you arrive at?
Oh, so many things. We could probably have a whole conversation just on this. My faith dwindled pretty early on. Faith, however, over the past few weeks has significantly impacted me in a positive way. I've been shown a lot of love. I think we've kind of reframed the way that we've thought about this whole scenario as a very negative thing to a potentially positive thing. You know, we're kind of looking at it as something that had to happen to kind of project us forward, to teach us lessons about how to move forward, and to also just really garnish the relationships with these other brands that are American made. So faith has been a tough one. However, it has come back really strong for me. We're going to kind of harness that power, also show our kids, you know, what you can do in a time like this if you pick out the positives. As far as the country, I am, you know, when we started what we were doing, the two things that I was told is don't do it because it's too hard and it's too expensive. That wasn't a good answer to me and when we were starting it. And now I can see this community of other American-made brands and the people that follow those brands and our own customers. And we're on a real pendulum swing of making things in America again. So I feel very strong, not only about American manufacturing, but about the American people. You know, and just overall, I think, you know, sometimes when these bad things happen, it's like how you pivot and how you move forward. And it could potentially and usually is better in the long run than it would have been without those bad things happening. So, you know, I'm looking into the future. I'm asking myself and I'm praying that I would have the guidance and the authority to kind of lead and move forward. So that was a long-winded answer, but we're trying to strip all the negativity out of the cards we've been dealt and move forward in a positive way.
I'll take a long-winded answer like that any day. Justin, it's the ones that don't make a lot of sense that I can't work with. in my career, I've had a couple of those and you just have to edit around them, but this one I do not. And I appreciate that you speak from the heart and it's clear when you're talking about your company and obviously this experience. I know that the future is uncertain. I am very excited to one day wear a pair of Opiway shoes because I'm on the path now. There's no getting off of it. And if we can be helpful in any way, we want to continue to be. So right now we'll make sure that those resources are available for our audience. And we'd love to just continue to follow your story, you know, whichever way it turns, because you never know, you know, even a turn that doesn't seem in the one direction you thought, like leads to even a bigger story. And that's one of the amazing things about working in journalism, but it's also just one of the miraculous things about life, about how stories cross paths or build on each other. And it's some of those things that you can't entirely explain, but are pretty amazing to witness. So I know you're really busy and I know you got a lot on your plate. And I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Well, thank you so much. And I'd love to have you guys follow what we're doing and maybe have a follow-up sometime. We've been handwriting notes to everybody that has given to the GoFundMe. And handwriting those notes, the one thing that I continue to tell people is I am committed to see this through. You believe in us enough to give your money. And so I'm going to put commitment on the line here and we're going to make this happen however we can.
Well, I look forward to our follow-up, but if we do it, when we do it, not if we do it, it'll be in person in North
that
Carolina. That's going to be, that's what we're going to do. Justin, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for believing in quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news. Every time you join us or share or save our content, you help us build a solution in news. And we are so grateful.
We have a few other ways you can support our mission, from joining our insider community Scoop, to shopping our gear at our Smarter Shop, to just telling a friend. The best way to do any of this is to visit smarternews.com or follow us at Smarter News on social media. Don't worry, we put all of this in the captions so it's easy for you. Plus, we added our email just in case you want to drop us a note. We always love hearing from you. Thank you for helping us deliver news smarter.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.